All right. When you hear the music, you know it's 8 o'clock on Tuesday night right here on Kayak Fishing Radio. I am your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as a Bad Bat Cast. Oh, no. That's right. So you can catch all of my goings-on at abadbatcast.com or yakangler.com, which if you're into kayak fishing, I highly advise you check that out, sign up, become a member. It's free, and a lot of helpful information there for you. Plus, pretty nice information site, Yak Social, and all things like that. So, oh man, it is Tuesday, September 27th. Man, where's the time going? Where's the time going? Good news is the temperature's dropping for all of us in Florida. That's always a good thing. It turns the water temperature drops a little bit and turns on the bite, man. So I had a pretty good week of weekend of fish in there, and we'll get to that in a little while. We'll also talk about some autumn fishing tactics, the fall bite in Florida. And we can talk about that sort of stuff from other areas too, because I know Greg Crisp, the Hammerhead, is on the phone with me. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing pretty good.
Greg writes the kayak fishing blog yakfish.net, and is based out of New Hampshire. So it's quite a difference in our fisheries, and we'll talk about some of those tactics here in a little while. And I got area code 516. I'm going to guess that that is my guest, Pete McDonald. Is that you, Pete?
Yep, I'm here. Rob, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, man? All right. Yeah, that's right, kids. Now, for all of you that don't know, this is Pete McDonald on the phone with me. He has written an awesome book called The Blitz, and we're going to talk about that for a few minutes here, but also writes the blog Fishing Jones. And I highly recommend Pete check out his site. It's an awesome site. I get a lot of inspiration from that, you know, because nobody can just put a photograph up there from a cell phone picture and a paragraph, and it's awesome. So welcome to the show, Pete, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. Now, you are from Florida, correct?
I'm actually originally from upstate New York, but I moved to Florida when I was a little kid and spent my formative years there, so I consider myself pretty much a Floridian. You know, not too many people there are native to begin with.
So. Right, that's right. No, I think that's awesome. Did you live around Boca Grande?
I lived on the other coast. I grew up in Boca Raton, Florida.
I had the Boca. Coast. I had the Boca on there.
You had
that's
the Boca,
awesome.
Right? That's,
yeah.
That's correct.
Well, so you're familiar with Florida fishing, man, and I know that you get down here once in a while, and you're kind of you kind of love the ditch fishing thing, which is really funny. Our Monday night host, Redfish Chuck Levi, who's a kayak fishing guide out of Titusville, he is all of a sudden addicted to the ditch fishing. And his latest thing is fly fishing in ditches for juvenile tarpon, and he's doing a good job at it, man. So you ever get around any of that stuff around Titusville or anything like that? Because there's some really good ditches around there, man.
I don't get up there too often. A lot of my travel – well, actually, I do now. I've been going to Orlando a bit, but a lot of my travel brings me down to Fort Lauderdale and south to Miami, where I will just throw a fly rod in my travel gear and some flies. And the beauty about Florida is salt water obviously is the best thing about it, but almost any roadside body of water you come across, odds are you're going to find a fish in it. So I started catching... really going after peacock bass down in South Florida and having a really good time with that.
Yeah, it's there's some exotics down there, and there's like a never-ending network of canals around Miami. Every time I've driven through there on the way to the Keys, I'm like, man, you could just like put a kayak in just about anywhere and just have miles and miles of places to fish, and you never know what you're going to catch. There's a kayak guide in Sarasota, Steve Gibson. He runs the Southern Draw kayak fishing down there, and he gets down to the Everglades once in a while. And they go down there, and they catch so many exotic species around there. It's not even funny. It's like some sort of world aquarium, you know, with they catch Oscars, and, I mean, you name it. It's crazy down there. They're just, like, all over the place down there. Is it the same thing in Miami, too?
Yes, yeah. In fact, there's a in Boca Raton, the FWC has an exotic species lab. I want to call it a lab, but just dedicated to dealing with invasives. And it's just, you know, Florida is anything tropical in the world is going to grow and thrive there. And so, you know, you drive down the road and you see iguanas, you see, you know, when I was a kid growing up there, we would always see walking catfish, and
yeah,
after a really heavy rain, they'd be in the puddles in the parking lots and whatnot. And they actually introduced the peacock bass into the canals in Miami to help combat a lot of these invasive species, particularly the tilapia and the Oscar. But they're all still there, and it's kind of fun. People have invented, you know, the canal slams, which, depending on where you are, I know a buddy of mine up in Palm Beach, it's like a clown knife fish, an Oscar, a peacock, and then, you know, I think it's just a regular largemouth bass.
That's awesome. And I gotta hand it to you, man. You did a post a while back about you were going somewhere, like going to Florida or something, and it was like fly rod storage, and you had like your four-piece rod like all taped to the lid of your suitcase and stuff. I thought that was like that was awesome.
Yeah, that was that was a case where I didn't have room to bring my normal fishing stuff, and I really wanted to bring it. So I just figured, if I lay it diagonally and duct tape it to the lid of the suitcase, it'll fit. And it worked, and it didn't break. And I try not to do that too often, though. I feel like I'm playing with fire.
I thought that was awesome. I'm running into the same problem because I'm going to Charleston I'm a single digit midget now, so I got 9 days. So next Thursday I'm heading out, and we're getting together with a bunch of the kayak fishing radio crew and yak angler crew, and about four times a year we get together somewhere and we go camping and we go kayak fishing, and we're going to fish Copahee Sound, and they call it Redfishville, so we're all excited about that. And it's a lot of fun, but I'm running into a challenge because I have a big, huge hockey bag that I put all of my my camping gear in, and I'm flying, but I got 2 7-foot spinning rods that I can't manage to fit in the Mark Messier hockey bag, so I'm kind of like scrambling trying to figure out a way to transport my gear. You know, it can get the fly rod in there, no problem, but no can go on the spinning rods. So I don't know if a 50-inch redfish, if I'd be able to handle that on an 8-weight or not. So
you won't know until you try. Either way, you'll go for a good ride, right?
Absolutely, man. But, you know, it's just as dangerous me having the 8-weight out there without any fish on it, you know, because I like to hang up back casts on mangrove branches and stuff. So that's where I got my nickname from.
All right.
But anyway, so you got a book coming out, and I've seen kind of like the organic growth of it, and you know, every once in a while you'd throw a picture up on your blog and talk about it and stuff, and I think that's awesome. And Tosh Brown did the photography, and he has always been one of my favorite fishing photographers of all time, especially like in the fly fishing world and trout and stuff like that. So how did that all come together, and tell me a little bit about your book.
Well, I guess the easiest place to start is, simply put, it pretty much came about because of my blog, Fishing Jones, and I was one of the earlier bloggers in the fishing, fly fishing realm. I started back in 2003, and there were a couple guys well before me. I think Moldy Chum was already around, and there was this guy named Alistair from Scotland who I think is recognized as the official first fly fishing blogger. But anyway, getting back on track, I had kind of, Midcurrent was in its infancy then, and if people don't know, midcurrent.com is probably, or not
excellent.
Probably, it is the, yeah, it's the best fly fishing resource online. And I just somehow started exchanging emails a little bit with Marshall Cutchin, who's the founder and publisher of Midcurrent. And a couple years ago, Tosh had contacted him about a different book project, and Marshall happened to recommend me as a writer to Tosh, so we spoke, and that project required too much of a time commitment, and I just had a kid, and it would have been too much time away from the family, so I had to turn it down. And he called me back the next day and said, "Hey, Pete, you live in the Northeast now, right?" And I said, "Yeah, I live on Long Island." He's like, "Do you like to striper fish?" I said, "I'd love to do it." He said, "Well, let's do a book on stripers." And that's pretty much how it happened. It was Tosh's idea, and we tried to come up with a good format, and we decided on the photo essay book that it became. And we didn't want to do a how-to or where-to, because there are hundreds of those books that have been done really well, and there was not a need for another one. So we just wanted to try and tell the story of the culture of fly fishing.
What can you add to it? You know, what can you say? You know, how to that hasn't been already said. You know, it's kind of I understand
right.
What you're saying. Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
And, you know, there are these great books by guys like Rick Murphy and Lou Tabery, and I'm leaving a dozen people out, but all these books that you kind of, when you get acquainted with Northeast saltwater, those are the first books you read. So we wanted to try and do something different.
Yeah. So how long did it take you to do it?
Well, we did our first trip together. Well, Tosh was in Texas, first of all. He lives in Austin, Texas. So to coordinate doing all the shoots took a lot of legwork. But we started in, I want to say, October 2009. And we did our last trip last October in North Carolina. And so it took us a year of trips going from Maine to North Carolina, and then from there it took us it took me from that time till I want to say March to write my essays for it, and Tasha sort out the photos, and then you had to go through the edit process and the photo selection, and I went to the press in May, and then it came out in July. So
I bet you that was hard, man, because, you know, I mean, I don't imagine Tosh takes too many bad pictures, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, you got like 100 awesome pictures in front of you, you know? How do you pick which one you want to Tosh, you know? Wow.
Well, thankfully that was his job, not mine, because he posted hundreds of them up on his toshbrown.com site. And you can see some of the pictures he took, and there's a lot of spectacular stuff that didn't make it in the book. And plus, we filled in with other great photographers on the East Coast, pretty well-known fly fishing photographers, and like Matt Botet and Dave Skoke and Barry and Kathy Beck and a few other people all contributed, and Brian Horsley and people that take excellent photos, and they really filled the book out.
Is that Fly Tire Extraordinaire Dave Skoke?
Yeah.
Same guy? Oh, wow. He tries some awesome flies, man.
Yeah, he does. And there's a whole chapter, actually the entire chapter on the Boston fishery is all about our experience fishing with him, because he's a real character. He's a great guy, and he just took us. He led us to all of his fishing spots in Boston, and got us out on the harbor. And he is. We probably couldn't have done a lot of New England without his help, to be honest with you. He really plugged us in there.
What would you say was your favorite time, or your favorite trip, you know, out of the whole process? Do you have like one day that sticks out that you just go, wow, that was pretty damn awesome?
I would say that's really tough, because we went to so many great places and they were great for different reasons, to seeing sight casting to 40-inch striped bass on pristine sand flats in Maine, to wading in the marshes in North Carolina for redfish, which is something I hadn't done before, which was really – I'd fished for redfish in Florida, but not this way. It was pretty amazing. And then I would have to say the most intense was fishing the false albacore run. We hooked up with a guide in North Carolina named Brian Horsley, who is pretty much the man for false albacore fishing on the East Coast. You know, everybody, you hear his name in fly fishing as the false albacore guy, and he fishes out of Harker's Island, which is the famous false albacore spot. And we had a day out there where, you know, to put it in perspective, here in the Northeast, the albies are up now, and when they come in, they're up, and then they're down, and then they're up, and then they're down, and you chase them, and by the time you get your rod loaded, they're gone, and then you snag your line on something, and they drive you absolutely crazy. But when we were there, they stayed up, and we would motor up to these. I mean, it's not always like that, but we just hit it on the right day, and there were these bait balls that were the size of kitchen tables, just dense with bay anchovies, and there were sharks just lazily swimming through them, and then you'd see these flashes of silver, you know, these false albacore just cruising through, and you'd throw your fly in there, and it was just unreal, and that was the best day, and it was made more surreal that I had eaten some fried mullet that didn't sit too well with me, so I was dealing with food poisoning. Hadn't eaten in 2 days, yet I didn't want to pass up this opportunity. So I was delirious and having great fishing. It was made for a great combination.
I remember reading a post about that on your blog one day, and it was like a picture, and it was like, I can't remember what the picture was, but it was something. I mean, I'm just like, you know, you have this knack of just like putting it like a cell phone picture up there on your blog, and then all this, you know, you write like a sentence, and it's like the funny. I mean, I'm like on the floor laughing. You know, it was like the back of a toilet seat, and it's like, you know, the effects of, you know, bad food poisoning from fried mullet or something. You know, I remember that post. That was pretty. It was pretty flippin' funny. You know.
Just by a bottle of ciproflaxin or something like that.
I think that's what it was. It was something like that, you know. And it's like, oh man, that's terrible. But that I get really jacked up on that. Like, it really inspires me to do stuff like that, you know. And it's the way that you do that kind of stuff inspires me to, you know, kind of pay attention and look around, and I can do stuff like that too, you know, just if I'm looking for it, you know. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's awesome, and I think that some of the best posts are like that, are just the best, you know, because it's a paragraph and a picture, and it's like awesome. So that really sits well with me, man. So if we're looking for to pick up a copy of your book, The Blitz, where would we be able to find that?
Well, the best, there's two places to get it. Well, there are a bunch of places now, but the easiest is if you go to, it's published by Departure Publishing. So if you go to departurepublishing.com, you can find it there. And the address is like departurepublishing.com/blitz. Or if you want to signed copy, you can just go to fishingjones.com, and I have copies in my house that I've been selling to people directly that I've signed and personalized. So
cool.
That's the two best ways to get it.
Well, I mean, all the stuff I've seen from it, it looks awesome. And, you know, read that review on MidCurrent. I was kind of using that as promo this week, you know, putting it on the Kayak Fishing Radio Facebook page and kayakfishingradio.com and stuff like that just to get it out there. And hopefully we get people. Now, one thing that you might not realize, this is a live show right now, but everybody can go back. It's available on iTunes as a podcast. And we get about 3 to 3,500 downloads a month on our iTunes that are listening to the stuff archived, and you know, we have a great time with it, and so I'm glad to have you on. Now, have you ever gone kayak fishing?
I have. I don't do it a lot. Because my day job is I'm an editor for Boating Magazine, which is about power boats. So
naturally,
I'm inclined to fish from a boat when I get the opportunity. And then in Florida, a lot of times I'm flying down for a work trip, and I'm fishing from rental car and foot, basically. But I have done it, and I hope to do it more. I've been tempted to buy a kayak the past year or so, but having a couple kids kind of put a dent in that plan.
Absolutely. You know, always look on Craigslist. You know, sometimes you can find deals there.
Right.
But, you know, now, so this is, you're getting to the time of year right now where it's like the end, the blitz, the, you know, Montauk and the whole thing. Are you got any plans to get out there? You've been out there recently, with some of that killer surf action going, surf fishing action going on right now. Has it
I have
started?
Been out, I haven't been out. I've been, let me start over. I have been out, fishing a little bit of late, but I've actually been on the road, unfortunately, the past 2 weeks, where the false albacore fishing up here has been unbelievable, from reports that I've heard from people and photos that have been emailed. But I'm hoping to get out this coming week, and it's really just getting started up here, actually, which is great. And I'll be out there as much as I possibly can in the next couple months. And some people go all the way through mid-December. I usually have one last big fishing trip. Usually the day after Thanksgiving, I kind of make my official last trip and then hang it up, because growing up in Florida, I get kind of sick of the cold.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame you, man. You know, if you know how it is, but with me, if it, 60 degrees is like, that's cold, that's jacket time, that's, you know, the whole nine yards, and anything below 60 is definitely way too cold for me, for a Florida boy, you know. No, that Montauk surf cult, surf fishing culture up there is just unbelievable. And I've heard one of my friends at work is from there, and he's just told me stories about that. And that's one of the things that I've always wanted to do, is get up there and fish that. You know, it's people up there sitting on rocks, you know, and they get their rocks and their wetsuit, and it's like, you know, they're getting pounded with, you know, 5 foot waves, and I mean, it's just crazy. But one thing that you guys do have up there that we don't have here, besides stripers, is a large population of large bluefish. And I met my first bluefish at Mosquito Lagoon this year. Okay, and this was only about a 16 or 17 inch bluefish, right? But it pulled me off of my anchor in my kayak. And I had a stakeout pole stuck down there, and it also pulled me off of that. And it's like trying to drag me around. And I thought, man, what do I have here? And get it up next to the boat, and it's a 17-inch bluefish, you know, as he's shaking his head and he's regurgitating everything all over me and stuff. It was awesome. So I have like a major crush on bluefish now, and I wish that they were around. And You know, all I've heard is stories about these, well, you know, it was like a 37-inch bluefish and all this stuff, you know. So I need to get up there and get some of that fishing in up there.
Yeah, you definitely got to come up and try it.
Yeah, now we got the landing crew, Mark Wheeler. He's our Wednesday night host, Mid-Atlantic out of Virginia Beach. How you doing, Mark?
Doing good, doing good. You got me all jazzed up. I'm heading up to Montauk Thursday night.
Well, Pete's the man, man. You know, he's up there. There you go. I'm jealous, man. You taking the kayak with you?
No. I'm going up there. It was called LIBA, Long Island Beach Buggy Association, and Montauk Surf Casters Association are retiring my grandfather's number.
Oh, okay.
So I'm heading up there. They're going to do a little, thank you. There's going to be a plaque put on the Lost Fisherman's Memorial out there at the lighthouse. And then my butt's sitting on Turtle Cove or Shagwan Point, if I can get out to the point there. And I'm going to be plugging away until my eyeballs can blow out of my head.
Yeah, you got like a 12-foot rod to sit there and like cast an 8-ounce weight, you know, an 8-ounce lure, like half a mile or something.
Nah, that's too heavy, man. I got a couple of 10-foot lamy glass rods.
Awesome.
that I could throw. My grandfather's favorite bait, a yellow darter. That damn thing a country mile. And then I've heard they're eating a lot of sand eels, so that goes back to diamond jigs with a green tail or soft plastics, or my personal favorite, a needle bait.
Well, if you get some, if you want to make me really envious, get some big bluefish and take some pictures with the GoPro and send them down to me, man. I'll be like really envious.
Did you see my new addition to the wall that I have?
No, not yet.
Check out my Facebook page. It's
okay.
Mark Wheeler Jr., a.k.a. Landing Crew. My grandfather caught at one point a line class record bluefish. It was right around 25 pounds and
nice.
On 12-pound line. And it was a world record for a few years before someone broke it, like a 26-pound fish. But caught from the surf and everything. And he's got it, not a great mount, but a mount of it. And it's got the Lenny Crew-approved yellow darter stuck in his maw in commemoration. I mean, it's all chewed up and gnarly. But, yeah.
Awesome.
That's what I'm doing. This
now,
weekend,
Greg,
and then
Greg Crisp, Pete, Greg Crisp is he's up in the New Hampshire, and he fishes the Boston area once in a while at night for stripers and stuff. And Greg, there was a big fishing tournament, a kayak fishing tournament in Jamaica Bay this year. And how many people were there, Greg? Do you remember how many folks were in that kayak tournament?
Is that the Casting for Recovery tournament in May?
Yeah. I believe it was. I can't remember, but I want to say 400 or 500 people in kayaks out there, man. It's an awesome thing up there, and definitely there's not a shortage of people in the Northeast fishing out of little plastic boats, you know. But the thing is, every area has like their certain favorite kind of kayak that they use, and everybody that Greg was up there talking to a lot of the folks, you know, that were camping and kind of hanging out waiting to go, and everybody there had Hobies, you know, the pedal driven kayaks, you know. And it seems to be a really, really popular boat up there for the conditions up in the Northeast. So if you're looking at boats, look at one of those, man.
Well, it's mostly because you're trolling. You're trolling the tubes, and you're trolling big bucktails and stuff like that. Mostly it's the tube. I can't remember the exact name. In either green or pink, the curly tube, as I call it, is what I call it. So you got to cover a lot of ground. And, you know, these guys don't want to be paddling for 2-3 hours, and next thing you know, their arms are giving out. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Now, Do you guys have any questions for Pete? I'm going to go down the row here, and I got some folks on the line here. Mark, you want to start? You have any questions for Pete in his book, The Blitz, Fly Fish in the Atlantic Baitfish Migration there?
You know, kind of envious. I don't know how. Do you do any of the fly fishing off the surf?
I don't do a lot of it. I've done some of it. There are guys that are a lot better at it than me. We did do a lot of it in the book. The most memorable was fishing the beaches with Bob Popovich down in New Jersey, who was probably, you know, one of the best fly tiers and surf fly fishermen alive. So that was a real, real awesome experience. And got to do it some in Montauk with a guy named Jason Puris, who runs the website thefin.com, and he's a real
I know him.
He's a real
fisher
out there.
I remember, funny story for you, if you ever get a chance to talk to Jason again, he was out there, oh man, this one must have been 10 years ago, and he was throwing the fly, and he couldn't, and he kept on getting a knot when he on his back cast, not figuring out why, until he finally looked on his back cast, it was hitting a rock and coming around and looping, and it was like one of those things where as soon as it hit, it would just make a perfect, you know, granny knot. He was like, you gotta be kidding me. And of course, he can't move left, he can't move right, because, you know, every last person and their mother surf casting right next to him, you know, and it was one of those things where I looked at him, I was like, man, here's a rod, keep throwing, man.
That's funny. Area code 781, you're on the air with Kayak Fishing Radio. How you doing?
Hey, yeah, this is Eric in Boston.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. Yeah, you know, you mentioned of Dave Skoke, you know, I fish Winthrop a lot and run into him a couple times on the water. I ran into him one night. It was around midnight in the middle of just a complete storm. And he's out there fly fishing, taking fly fishing pictures, and I was, of course, surf casting. But, you know, we have a pretty hardcore, both surf boat and kayaking scene around Boston, especially at night. So wondering if he got a chance, to get out at night around here at all. Does he ever do any night fishing, or is it all daytime blitz stuff?
You mean me or
yeah?
No, that's
now, Pete.
Yeah, this is questions for Pete. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I meant, were you asking if I get a chance to get out at night in Boston?
Yeah. Did you get a chance to do any of that with Dave?
Oh no, we didn't. We went to a bunch of his top secret flats, which I can't talk about really, but places where he sight fishes for stripers is what we mostly did on foot, and he had this canoe. He car tops a canoe around. And,
yeah, you know, I always see his car parked with the canoe on it.
Yeah, exactly. And then he hooked us up with a guy named Rich Armstrong of Boston Fish Sticks Charters.
Yeah,
there.
I know Rich and Mandy.
Yeah, and so we went out with them and out into the harbor and out by Boston Light and through the maze of islands in there, which was awesome. And then he also hooked us up with going out to Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard and Barnstable and some other areas.
Nice.
And so, but we did not do night fishing on that trip, which it's a huge part of the culture, but in a photo essay book, it's hard to...
Tough, isn't it?
hard to
shoot at night.
Oh yeah, I run into that with the my GoPro. You know, I've been trying to take videos and make some nice kayak fishing videos and everything, and I'm kind of new at it. But one of the things that I love to do is fish dock lights at night, and it just doesn't work at night, man. I mean, it has to have some sort of light source, man, to be able to do it. Otherwise, it just looks like a couple of white blobs, and you know, you're wearing the camera on your head and. You know, it just doesn't come out very well. But that's awesome. All right, man. Well, Pete, like I said, anytime that you're in the area, I'm in Clearwater, St. Pete. If you're in the area doing anything, and I got a spare kayak for you, man. So anytime that you want to go, go out and chase some fish, anytime, just let me know, man. You're always welcome.
You know what? The next time I'm down there, I'm definitely going to give you a call, and we'll have to do that. That would be awesome. I'd love to take one of those night trips with you. That would be great.
Certainly.
Thanks a ton for having me on. I actually got to jump and do some kid stuff, but
no problem.
Appreciate it. And I'm going to download that, even though I hate the sound of my own voice played back, but I'm still going to download it.
Absolutely, man. No problem. And it was good to have you on, and I look forward to picking up a copy of your book and checking it out, man.
Thanks a lot, Rob, and nice talking to everyone else as well.
All right.
Pleasure.
Good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, that was Pete McDonald. He is, if you missed out on it, he came in late. He writes the blog Fishing Jones, which is it's a blast, and it's a big inspiration for me. That's where it was one of the first fly fishing blogs that I read when I first got into fly fishing and trying to find resources for it, and was an inspiration on. You know, my writing and how I write and things like that. It was just reading Pete's blog. So, you know, Pete's been doing it for a long time too, man. So that's pretty awesome. And I'm stoked about it, but, so check out his book. If you're so inclined and you like that stuff, Tosh Brown did a lot of the photography in it. And that is, it's called The Blitz, Fly Fishing the Atlantic Baitfish Migration, or the Atlantic Migration. I believe it's Baitfish Migration. And, Tosh Brown doing the photos. That guy is awesome. Check out that guy. That is toshbrown.com. You won't be disappointed. That guy's one of my favorite fishing photographers too, man. Especially the fly fishing stuff. So, anyway, we've gone through about 40 minutes here already, and that was awesome having Pete on and talking about fly fishing and all that stuff, man. So don't ever say I don't ever spend that I only talk about Florida fishing, man, because I like fishing in other areas too, man, and I don't mind talking about it. I might not know that much about it, but I like to hear about it and I like to talk about it, man. So that's this time of year right now up in Long Island and Montauk is that's a legendary time of year, man. And if you don't know anything about it, look into Montauk surf fishing culture, and it's a lot of character in there, man. It's awesome. A lot of good fishing too, man. Crazy people wading out and, like, you know, taking waves, standing out on a rock out in the middle of nowhere, you know. But that's you know, it's great. It's totally different. I mean, you think
come
that
on,
we're
Rob.
Yeah, you think we're crazy going around in little plastic boats, man. That's just as crazy, man. So definitely check that thing out if you're into extreme stuff. And I'm sorry, folks in the chat room there, if I'm not ignoring you. I'm just pacing around my desk here because I'm all jacked up about surf fishing and, you know, Montauk and all that stuff. That just gets me fired up, man. Once you see some of the you know, pictures and videos from that. I mean, there was a movie a guy was making about Montauk surf fishing culture that was just awesome. I'll have to dig that up. I found it, the trailer on Pete's blog, and it's like, it's amazing.
Rob, man, next year, if you want to fly up to Virginia Beach, we'll make the ride up to Long Island.
Yeah, now, what's that, about halfway?
You look at 3/4 before your flight, and then it's about a 12-hour drive, 14-hour drive, you know, stop in the city, see a buddy of mine, and then head up there. I've got enough rods and enough tackle to supplement the addiction, and I've got a place to stay too, so
awesome.
Time and place, we'll go.
Hold on, I'm looking for a sound bite here. Oh, here it is. I promised that I would do this, and for all of you, I know that that Eric and Greg are going to be mad at me, but anyway, here we go. That's right, folks. At the bottom of the fifth inning, Tampa Bay Rays 2 and the New York Yankees 1.
Good.
Thank you.
As long as the Rays get in the playoffs and the Yankees can knock off the Rays, that's fine.
Now, the always popular 2-hour show host himself, Redfish Chuck, is actually at the game, which is in St. Petersburg, by the way. And he tells me last night that he's going to be in town, and I'm like, dude, you know, when are you showing up? You know, get here early. You know, I got my spare kayak. I'll call in sick. We'll go out. We'll go fishing, and we'll have a good time because, you know, Chuck's my boy. Oh, no, I can't do that. Nope, can't do that. All right, thanks, Chuck. And he was supposed to text me updates. He is actually sitting in the owner's box. Yeah, I know. I don't get it either, you know. Yeah, a mystery to me. He's sitting in the owner's box at the Trop right now, watching the game, and totally blew me off. I said, hey, man, we'll go fishing. You know, and it's not like I'm some kind of chump or something here, man. Come on, Chuck. Chuck's my boy. You know, no wife, no kids. Come on over early. We'll go out fishing. But even if he didn't want to come, like, fish up here, I could have went down to St. Pete. We could have, fished Coffee Pot Bayou or something, man, for a couple of hours. Man, the bite is on. And let me just see if I can grab my link here real quick before... it's not the greatest thing in the world, but let's talk about Mr. Okay, gotcha. Music's a little loud there. But anyway, I'm going to put my video up from this past weekend, and for the second weekend in a row, I got nothing but HD sky, footage of the sky in HD on the GoPro. That's right, and I had a great day fishing again, and no dice on the GoPro. It looks great. You can see my rod tip bent down, and it's and there's me going, wow, look at that trout, it's awesome, look at that trout. And problem is, it didn't make it into a frame of film, because the GoPro was on my head pointing up at the sky. Here's my trip report real quick. Me and my buddy Keith hit, we were in the water about 7 o'clock on Sunday. We're sitting there, and, he goes one way, I go the other. We start casting, and, I'm just, like, letting the wind push me across the flat. And first thing I caught, about a 17-inch ladyfish. On a topwater, that's not a bad thing. I like ladyfish; they're fun. And it was funny because it hit me a long way off. You know, I mean, how far can you toss a topwater? You know, with your just an average, 7-foot medium action rod, right? So I give the thing, a nice chuck. I got a storm chug bug on it. It goes, pretty far for as far as you can cast something like that. You know, wind at your back and everything. So. Bam, it hits the water. I twitch it about twice, and it's on. And this thing, so I got this thing clear way the heck out there, And it's jumping, and it's diving, and it's cartwheeling through the air and stuff. It's awesome. I love ladyfish. They're so much fun. So get that in, and, one thing that, if you don't know, ladyfish don't really, basically when they get caught, the one thing that I don't like about the ladyfish is that they you can literally scare the crap out of them. Yeah. I know. That's what I said too. Yeah, that is pretty gross, man, when you got this pink gelatinous Looks like pink pudding pops all over your kayak, man. Yeah. So anyway, so I keep fishing, and with the top water, you know, the sun's coming up, everything's great. And next thing I get, same scenario, long cast, twitched it about 3 or 4 times, bam! It's about a 25-inch ladyfish. It's one of the biggest ladyfish I've ever seen. It was crazy. So anyway, keep drifting the flat. Switched over to the white DOA curly tails jigs with a 1/16-ounce Wahoo jig head. And it's getting nailed. There's birds diving around me. There's bait fish spraying. And it's great. And the next thing I get is like a 22-inch trout. And within about 40 minutes, it was really weird because that's a pretty nice trout for west coast of Florida. Next thing and it was all on the same lure. And within about 40 minutes, I had four more. I had a total of 5 large trout up to 25 inches, which is really weird. It was all on the same flat. Usually it's just you catch one of those bad boys on one flat and the rest of them are dinks. You know, but I caught not only 5 of those, but several keepers in the 16 to 17 inch range too. So the trout bite was definitely on fire over the weekend. Caught some jacks in there, some nice, probably about 12 inch jack crevalles were mixed in there. It was just a cornucopia of fish, and it was excellent. We had a great time, man. And so Keith meets back up with me. He got 0 fish. I was fishing next to this island on this grass flat, so I couldn't see on the other side, and I thought I heard thunder, so I paddle out to the edge of the island there and look around, and sure enough, man, the sky is blacker than the ace of spades. It's coming, and it looks like fog coming across the intercoastal, but oh no, it's not fog. What is it, kids? I don't know. Let me see. Yeah, that's right. That's what I said too. And I said, oh no, what are we going to do? We're out here in the middle of nowhere. This is just a mangrove island, so we can't get on it. And that's what it started doing. That's right, that's exactly what it started doing. So we had to paddle through that, put the rods down, head for this other island, which was about a half mile away, get on there. And just so you guys know, it's a great rain protector when you're out in the elements. Are the short little palmetto branches. But, word to the wise, you know, they definitely help keep the rain off you. And if you need to build a shelter, those things are top-notch. But, word to the wise, make sure that they don't have any wasp nests hanging under them, okay? Because that can be definitely unpleasant, to say the least. Yeah. So anyway, between thunderstorms, you know, like the storm passed and, you know, we're sitting there and we were kind of wading about knee deep and all of a sudden about 5 feet away from Keith, he's got his little DOA curly tail jig sitting on the bottom and bam, his rod takes off, man. Like, I mean, reels, you know, drag screaming. It's just, you know, yeah, that's what it was doing. I'm telling you. And I was like, man, what do you got going on there? You know, little dink trout isn't going to do that. So it turns out after he gets about 10 minutes, he gets it in. It's a 3-foot bonnet head shark. And now he's looking at me like, hey, you know, you're going to get the hook out for me. I'm like, really? And so we were kind of hemming and hawing around trying to figure out how to get the hook out of it, you know, because the hook's in the business end of a shark here. You know, sharks have teeth, all of that stuff. So, yeah. So, anyway, we ended up, we had to cut the line. I don't know, I'm not sticking my hand in the shark's mouth to get the hook out. Sorry. Sorry, shark. But sorry, environmentalists, and sorry, PETA. And everybody else, but sorry, I'm not going to lose a couple of digits doing that, sorry. So the shark was released unharmed and swam off and was a happy little bonnet head. And he was going off into, you know, bonnet head land doing what bonnet head sharks do, which is, you know, eat. So that's great. So anyway, that was our trip. We had a pretty good, you know, caught a couple of more dink trout the rest of the day, and it was a good trip, man. Water temperature's dropping a little bit, and it was a good time, man. Anytime that you go out there and you can catch five fairly large trout is a good one. Oh, no. Uh-oh. I'm going to have to do a quick update here. That's right. Where did it go? Oh, there it is. Sorry, me and my Mac. New York Yankees 2. And your Tampa Bay Devil Rays, or Tampa Bay Rays 2. In the, what is it? Top of the sixth. Middle fifth, top of the sixth. Or bottom of the fifth, top of the sixth, whatever. Whatever they call that. So anyway, that was it. So, Greg, Chris, man, did you get out fishing over the weekend? Got any good fishing stories for me?
Nothing really good for me. I did get out, got out 3 days, and I took a 4-day weekend, so that was good. But the fishing for me wasn't that good. Yeah. So, but, you know, it's still, you know, a bad day fishing is still better than a good day at work. So I can't complain too much, but.
Absolutely, man. So. I'd rather be out on the water getting skunked than at work. So I agree with you.
He was fishing the wrong place.
Yeah. Where should he have been?
I was fishing like 15 miles south of him. I launched probably a few hours earlier than Greg did. Went out to my spot, banged out a fish that was about 30 pounds, and then I broke my drive, my Hobie drive.
Oh,
so I had to return back, and I always carry a spare drive in my car. So I went back to my car, got another new drive, went back out to the same spot, and banged another 43-inch fish, right around 30 pounds. And, yeah, so it started off pretty good, but it was pretty slow after that. And picked up one spot where just at the right time, there's this little rift that just gets on fire. And picked up a bunch of, like, 30 to 34-inch stripers there.
Good deal. On hoagies?
Then decided on hoagies, yep, fishing the 13-inch plastics. And
nice.
And the best part was I was, you know, in that little spot that I was fishing that was had all the 30-inch fish in it, the water there is 2 and 3 feet deep.
Wow.
But I tell you, the absolute best part of my night was I wanted to try one more spot before I went in. So I scoped it out. I trolled over the whole area to see if there was any fish there because there had been fish there a couple weeks ago. No fish. So I turned to head in. Get hit on the troll, lose the fish, and now I'm thinking I lost that fish for a reason because that was a decent fish. Take about three more casts, cast up into about 4 feet of water, get this hammering hit, and see this huge striper jump out of the water. Stripers generally don't jump, but when you hook a 30-pound fish in 4 feet of water, sometimes they go up instead of off to the side.
Oh,
and
man.
I have never seen a striper jump so high. It was amazing. It was like, I don't know, about 2:30 in the morning. The fish had to be 4 feet in the air. I could see it was like it was daytime. It was like in a upside down U shape, and it hit that water. And I was like, wow, that is a really fat bass. You know, it was like it was another a little over 43 inches, probably weighed just a little over 30 pounds because it was so fat. And That was a pretty good nightcap.
Yeah, the wake from that's probably, you know, moving your boat later on, you know, about 10 minutes later.
they give you a pretty good tow. I mean, I was chasing that fish at about 3 miles per hour once he got going.
No, when it jumped and hit the water, 30-pound fish, that probably made a pretty nice wave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then you were talking about bluefish on the way in. There has not been bluefish around Boston this year. They just the bite hasn't happened. and I could smell the smell of either, when you smell the smell, it's either bluefish or a menhaden, and trolled over this slick spot and expecting to mark a school of menhaden, and did not. And then I, as soon as I got through it, I got hit, and again it dropped it. A cast later, I was on to about a 12-pound bluefish, and battled him up to the boat. Took him home for dinner, even.
Hmm.
So that was awesome. And that was my end to the night. And I was like, okay, now I'm done.
Yeah,
my work here is done.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Mark, how did you do in the TKAA tournament over the weekend?
I bombed it. And you know, fishing when you got fronts that move through, and then you know, you got another one right behind it, it really screwed the fishing up pretty bad. I mean, only a couple guys caught bass, and even still, they weren't like legendary bass. But little story for you, sitting there, and you know, I've caught at this point white perch, and actually, I had at one point. Unbeknownst to me, the state record white perch in my hands, and was like, I don't need this, and threw it back. It would have blown the old record away. anyway.
Oh, cool.
Caught white perch, caught bluegill, crappie, you know, catfish, bowfin. And I was on one lake, and there's another lake right across the street that actually feeds this lake. So I'm like, you know, I'll make the executive decision to move. I moved, I started fishing, I'm trying to find the area. I cast out a rattle trap across some rocks with a deep point, bring it across, hit it off a rock, it deflects, bam, I get hit, set the hook, this monster of a bass comes out of the water, shakes his head, I'm going, I got a new kayak, because I can see all the hooks are in it, you know, it's not going anywhere. I play it around for about a minute, 2 minutes, bring it in, put it on the measuring board, 21-inch bass, I'm like, oh, you know.
So what happened?
So, I grab the camera, and I'm shaking, and I try to take a picture. I don't hear the, you know, that sound. There's no burp. So I take a look at it, and I've got my hand on top of the bass as I'm looking at the camera. The camera's not on. So I hit the button. It's not turning on. So I take my hand off the bass for a second to put a little more pressure on it, because my right hand at this point, it's wet. It's cramping. I have, like, no pressure on it. Use my left hand. Hit the button, it turns on. I bring the camera back up, take the picture. That bass kicks once, goes in the water, middle finger in the air as it's going in. I've got no picture. I am in a fit of rage. I grab my camera, and I proceed to cast it without a line across the lake onto some rock.
Oh, man. Not good.
So that was that.
Not good.
And I got something for you, Rob.
What's that?
Myself and Kevin are going Sheep's Head mauling tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I finally,
good deal.
Finally got some time to get out with him. I mean, he's been asking me all year, dude, you got to go Sheep's Head fishing. I know I can. I got to work. Well, I got some time off finally, and want to go out there and play the smackdown on them. Goofy-looking buggers.
Yeah. Well, hey, believe it or not, I caught a couple of and this was kind of weird. This doesn't usually happen. You know, I'm not using any sort of bait. I'm not using scent, anything like that, okay? I'm not meat-chucking. And caught no less than two about 8-inch pinfish through the mouth. They weren't foul-hooked or anything on DOA the curly tails. It was crazy. So, and those are porgies, too. Mark, so they're basically like sheep's head, they're like little porcupines, you know, hence the expression pinfish.
Cool.
So Greg, are you sorry that you didn't get down there fishing with Eric over the weekend?
Oh yeah, I would have been better off, but there was a little get together tournament that was a little bit farther north, the boundary for it, so that's what I was trying to fish for.
And there were some big fish caught up there, but it was what he didn't tell you was that night was some pretty serious raining. When I got off the water, my rain jacket had totally soaked through, and
oh,
I was ankle deep in water inside of my waders after
oh,
5 hours
really?
On the water.
Holy
yeah.
crap, that's terrible.
Yeah, I think it rained like 3 inches.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was it was a pretty miserable night as far as sitting in the kayak paddling around, but there were fish to be had, and after 5 hours of that, I don't know why I was so trashed, but that night I was just trashed and didn't stick around to try to fish some more at that point. I was thinking I was gonna fish the spot I was in at night and then move and fish somewhere else as the sun came up, and just didn't have anything left. So but,
yeah, we were out for a while too. We went out we were in the water probably about 7 o'clock in the morning, and we didn't get out probably till close to 2:30. So it was a pretty long day for us down here. You know, it's still fairly warm here, but the temperature has dropped a little bit. And that definitely makes all the difference in the world. When you go from, 89 degrees down to 82, you know, or 83 or 84, depending on where you're at, that's a big difference. And I've noticed the last 2 weekends that the fish are really eating. And the dock lights at night, too, are really fired up. And real quick here, I've got to get it quick. That's right. New York Yankees 3, Tampa Bay Rays 2. And the Rays are coming up to bat in the bottom of the sixth. So come on, let's turn this thing around. Let's go, Rays. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, I know. All right, man. So what's the plan for this weekend, Greg?
Well, this weekend, my wife's working, so I think I am going to just take the kids out on the pond and see if I can't catch some largemouth and some sunfish with them and relax a little bit and get ready to head down to the boondoggle on Thursday.
That's right. I was wondering if you were going to mail it in this weekend and save it up for the boondoggle, but I'm not doing that either. Boondoggle kickoff day for me is Thursday next week. So, this weekend I'm going, Friday, we've got a cold front coming through. The temperature is supposed to drop, supposed to be a low of 67. That's right. I said 67. That's right. That's right. Isaac, what do you think about
hey,
that,
folks,
man?
This is Isaac the Nothing Miller, Kayak Fishing Radio West, at ICAST.
That's right. And, that's summertime water for him. No, water temp should take, it might get into the 70s this weekend. So Sunday, we're going out and we're fishing some mangrove shoreline and stuff like that. So if it's been any indication of the trend lately, it should be a pretty good day. High tide, 5:45 a.m. And it's a big one, too. It's 3.2 feet, which is pretty big for around here. So we'll probably be out around 6:37-ish on the fall in tide, hitting the tidal creeks running through the mangroves along the shoreline. And the tactic to employ, this is what I'm thinking, is about 6 feet out from the mangroves, you know, the shoreline itself is a little sandy patch. And it's dotted with oyster bars here and there on the corners and stuff like that. What you do is you cast on there and you kind of bounce it on that sandy patch, and then there's a little drop-off. Drops down to about 2-3 feet. And in that drop-off, you know, there's no grass. It's usually just sand and mud and oysters. In that drop-off is where the fish are going to be. And 2 weeks ago, we were in the same area and had a pretty good day. But I think this is going to be even better this weekend with this temperature drop coming in. Fishing is going to just turn on, man. It's like somebody threw the switch and the fish are just going to be there and they're going to start eating. So that's the plan anyway. I could always be wrong, and cold front could throw everything off, and it could rain like heck, but it's supposed to be dry forecast, 20% chance of rain, so I'm stoked, man. I'm ready to get out there and get after it. And after 2 weeks in a row with filming the sky on my GoPro, by the way, I threw my link in the chat room there if you're interested. I made something out of nothing, man, so I had to make a joke out of it. So check that out if you're so inclined. And hopefully I can learn to point the GoPro down so I can get the water and the kayak in the frame. I like a nice blue sky with clouds and stuff like anybody else, but it's kind of hard to make a fishing video out of that. Oh, man. So, Eric, you fishing this weekend, man? What's your plan?
Yeah, I'll be out there. I haven't decided what I'm going to do. I my two options. One is to go back out and pound the stripers because we have about two more weeks where you have a shot at a really good-sized fish up here. And my other option is to go south and have a small chance at catching some false albacore and catch some just assorted small fish like black sea bass and scup and who knows, maybe some bluefish.
Black sea bass up there, man. That's cool. We get that down here, too. And they're a lot of fun to catch. Usually when, I don't get usually very big ones, but they're a lot of fun to catch. When you do find them, there's usually a couple of hundred with them. And they're usually, they'll eat DOA shrimps and stuff like that. It's great.
Yeah, I catch them on small plastics. They're fun to catch. They're typically like 10 to 20 inches long here. But they're a long drive for me. They're about an hour and a half drive from here. So there's Boston fishing, it doesn't have a lot of variety, especially right now the flounder season's closed. So, you know, your choice is basically around Boston to either go striper fishing or you could go striper fishing. So I usually go striper fishing.
That's terrible, man.
Yeah.
See, you guys have stripers. We have snook down here, man. So snook are like our stripers. I've never caught one, so I a striper. So I want to get out there and make sure that's one of the things on the to-do list for sure.
Well, if you make it up north here, Greg and I can take you out and put you on some fish.
Awesome.
It's not as hard as some people make it out to be. All you need is like a 10-inch chunk of plastic on a light jig head and throw it up in some shallow water and crank it fast and just be in the right place at the right time.
What would you guys say would be the best time of year to do that?
September.
Well, we'll have to put it on the boondoggle list, right? What do you think about that, Greg? Boston boondoggle?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. September's definitely a good month. The only thing I'd worry about is, you Floridians there and the fact that, 70 degrees and you guys are in parkas and stuff.
Absolutely, man. That's no joke. That's me for sure. Yeah.
The water was over 60.
If it was what?
This weekend was the first time where the water was over 60 in a few weeks. It's been in the upper 50s lately.
Yeah, dude, I'd be in insulated waders and stuff, man. Seriously, that's freezing water temperature, man. I mean, I don't even get in my kayak down here in the wintertime when the water temperature is below 60.
Yeah, around here, when we say it's freezing, we mean it's freezing. I posted a picture of a striper that I literally swam up onto a chunk of ice in the middle of January out kayak fishing.
See, now that's just nuts. Man. All right, man. Well, let's see. I think I'm going to mail it in Let me just double check the score real quick one more time before we're out of here. I'm sure the people listening to the podcast are like, all right, come on already, all right? We know the Rays won. 3-2, Yankees. Bottom of the sixth. And Jennings is batting. And two outs. One ball, one strike. Okay. So anyway, I'm mailing it in. And I'm getting out. And I'm sorry, I'm not the two-hour king like Chuck is. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to getting out this weekend, and I'm glad that the bite's turning on, man. It makes me happy. It was a long, long dog days of summer for me, man, from probably early July till the last couple of weeks. It's been pretty brutal for me, and it's not that I haven't been trying. So, anyway, I am your host, A Bad Back Cast. Thank you for everybody that tuned in and listened. And if you missed it, Pete McDonald from Fishing Jones was in talking about his book, The Blitz, Fly Fishing, The Atlantic Migration. And it was a great great time. Glad I had him in and glad he came in. And thank you, Pete. And thanks to Eric and Greg from up in the New England area representing Kayak. Kevin's there in the chat room. Howdy, Kevin. And nice video, too, on the Ocean Kayaks website there, buddy. That was kind of cool. It's kind of pretty cool when, you know, videos show up that you didn't know existed that are about you. That's kind of cool. So anyway, that's the extent of it, and I am out, and I'm your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as A Bad Back Cast. Check out my website, abadbackcast.com, and yakangler.com, and kayakfishingradio.com. And if you want a good laugh, watch my my video. It was done with no seriousness, and all humor was my intent. So check that out. And until next time, make sure you check out the Landing Cruise show tomorrow, Mid-Atlantic Report at 8 p.m. right here on Kayak Fishing Radio. Thursday, the godfather himself, Chip Gibson, is the original Kayak Fishing Radio show. And on Friday, Spike and Ike. So keep it all, keep it real, man. Right here, we got Kayak Fishing Radio just about every night of the week. And what else do you need, right? So until next time, I am your host, and A Bad Back Cast. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you guys later. Out.